Today's reading is from Exodus chapter 1, beginning at verse 1 and all the way through to the end of the chapter. These are the names of the sons of Israel, who went to Egypt with Jacob, each with his family: Reuben, Simeon, Levi and Judah, Issachar, Zebulun and Benjamin, Dan and Naphtali, Gad and Asher. The descendants of Jacob numbered 70 in all. Joseph was already in Egypt. Now Joseph and all his brothers and all that generation died, but the Israelites were exceedingly fruitful. They multiplied greatly, increased in numbers, and became so numerous that the land was filled with them. Then a new king, to whom Joseph meant nothing, came to power in Egypt. "Look," he said to his people, "the Israelites have become far too numerous for us. Come, we must deal shrewdly with them, or they will become even more numerous, and if war breaks out, will join our enemies, fight against us, and leave the country." So they put slave masters over them, to oppress them with forced labor, and they built Pithom and Ramesses as store cities for Pharaoh. But the more they were oppressed, the more they multiplied and spread. So the Egyptians came to dread the Israelites and work them ruthlessly. They made their lives bitter with harsh labor in brick and mortar, and with all kinds of work in the fields. In all their harsh labor, the Egyptians worked them ruthlessly. The king of Egypt said to the Hebrew midwives, whose names were Shiphrah and Puah, "When you are helping the Hebrew women during childbirth on the delivery stool, if you see that the baby is a boy, kill him, but if it is a girl, let her live." The midwives, however, feared God and did not do what the king of Egypt had told them to do. They let the boys live. Then the king of Egypt summoned them, the midwives, and asked them, "Why have you done this? Why have you let the boys live?" The midwives answered Pharaoh, "Hebrew women are not like Egyptian women. They are vigorous and give birth before the midwives arrive." So God was kind to the midwives, and the people increased and became even more numerous. And because the midwives feared God, he gave them families of their own. Then Pharaoh gave this order to all his people: "Every Hebrew boy that is born, you must throw into the Nile, but let every girl live."
Broken promises. I wonder what comes to mind when I say those words. Maybe for some of us, it's the government. They make so many promises in their election campaigns, don't they? But the question is, do they keep them? If you ask the opposition, then they would say that they don't, wouldn't they? Maybe for you it brings to mind friends and family. Broken promises in the past, people not keeping their word. I think often as humans we're not very good at keeping our promises. And so when we come to the Bible and we are greeted by a God who makes promises to his people, promises that we've just seen made to Abraham of land and people and blessing, the question comes, can God be trusted? Or are these just going to be more broken promises? What is God like? Well, the original readers of Exodus would likely have had these questions on their lips. They were waiting to go into the promised land on the edge of the River Jordan, trusting that God would give this land to them in the face of scary-looking opposition. And I'm sure they would have been asking themselves, can we really trust God? What is he like? Is he going to keep his promises? And as we saw before, the New Testament tells us that books like Exodus were also written for us. See, this isn't cold history. This is our history. This is the history of God dealing with his people, revealing what he's like and preparing us for Jesus. And so as God's people, we too are trusting in God's promises, trusting that in Jesus our sins have been forgiven, that we are his children, that he won't let us go, but he will keep building his church. trusting that one day we will know the complete joy of being God's people, in God's place, the new creation, enjoying the blessing of knowing God and being in his presence, never to leave. But like those first readers, we may well ask at times, can't God really be trusted? What is he like? Will he actually keep his promises? Is it worth giving up everything to follow Jesus? Well, if we find ourselves asking those questions, then Exodus is a great book for us to be coming to. Because firstly, we see that God is faithful to his promises. We see that in verses 1 to 7, God is faithful to his promises. It says, these are the names of the sons of Israel who went to Egypt with Jacob, each with his family: Reuben, Simeon, Levi and Judah, Issachar, Zebulun and Benjamin, Dan and Naphtali, Gad and Asher, the descendants of Jacob, numbered 70 in all. Joseph was already in Egypt. Straight away we are reminded of God's faithfulness to his people. That list of names are all part of Abraham's family. They are Jacob and his 12 sons, and they're all still here. Through famine and hardship and seemingly impossible situations, from one man who was too old to have children and his barren wife, have come 70 people safe in Egypt through Joseph, with those words still ringing in their ears: you meant it for evil, but God meant it for good, in the saving of many lives. God's hand has been on his people, keeping them and bringing them safely through. And what we see here is that even when that generation dies, God's promise doesn't die with them. It couldn't be any clearer if it tried, could it? Look at the language of verse 6. Now Joseph and all his brothers and all that generation died. But the Israelites were exceedingly fruitful. They multiplied greatly. They increased in numbers and became so numerous that the land was filled with them. I'm convinced that the language here is key. Fruitful and multiplied filled the land. That has Eden written all over it, doesn't it? God's command to Adam and Eve to be fruitful and to multiply, to fill the earth. We're meant to be seeing that God is working through his promises to restore what was lost at the fall. His people going from 70 to now so numerous that the land is filled with them. Again, that word numerous is what was promised to Abraham, wasn't it? In Genesis chapter 22, we hear the words, I will surely bless you and make your descendants as numerous as the stars in the sky and the sand on the seashore. It's as if the writer of Exodus is screaming, look, don't miss this. God is keeping his promises to his people. Another generation, but the same faithful God. God is faithful to his promises, even in the face of human opposition. A couple of years ago, we made the brave decision as a family to go down to France for a holiday with a one-year-old, Josiah. We packed up the car with a new gas barbecue to cook feasts on, and we got on the road without a hitch. Everything seemed to be going to plan, but then we smelt it. Gas. Our brand new gas canister for our barbecue was leaking into the car. And suddenly our smooth drive down south became very dangerous very quickly. Well, for the Israelites in verse 8, it's as if someone has turned on the gas and danger is suddenly at their door. Verse 8 says, then a new king, to whom Joseph meant nothing, came to power in Egypt. Look, he said, the Israelites have become far too numerous for us. Come, We must deal shrewdly with them, or they will become even more numerous, and if war breaks out, will join our enemies, fight against us, and leave the country. There is a new king in town, and suddenly from welcome guests, God's people become an unwelcome threat. The very thing that was a cause for hope, that God was keeping his promises, now becomes the reason that Pharaoh is treating them so harshly. As Pharaoh sees their growth as a direct threat to his rule and their safety. You can imagine the people in Egypt grumbling, can't you? Look at these Israelites coming in here, taking our jobs, clogging up our schools. Our healthcare is at bursting point. All they do is pop out more children, sponging off us. And so suddenly they find themselves as slaves. Again here we see a build-up of language to paint a vivid picture of the darkness of their plight. Verse 11, slave masters are put over them to oppress them with forced labour. Verse 12, they were oppressed. Verse 13, they were worked ruthlessly. Verse 14, they made their lives bitter with harsh labour. In all their harsh labour, the Egyptians worked them ruthlessly. And in the original language, a lot of these words are literally slaves or slavery. We're meant to see a repetition of the word slaves. God's people are slaves under ruthless and harsh masters. They made their lives bitter. See, Pharaoh's intention here is to squash them, to remove all hope so that their spirit is broken. And by the time they get home, they'll have no energy or desire to bring new life into such a harsh environment. And later on, we see that this wasn't just a short-term thing. No, in Exodus 12, we see that they were in Egypt for 430 years in total. And in the face of such darkness, the question must have come again and again, where are you, God? You brought us here and rescued us from famine for this? As they were beaten and bruised, many of them born into slavery, to die as slaves, they must have asked, why are you silent, God? Why do you feel so removed from me? We're trusting your promises, we're waiting, we're clinging on. And you seem to have forgotten about us. Don't you care about your people? Don't you care what is happening to me? Maybe you found yourself asking very similar questions at times, or very recently, feeling alone and forgotten about as you struggle with your health, or with fear, or loneliness, or exhaustion. And you feel like crying out to God, where are you? I'm trusting you, but you feel so distant, so absent. I'm not even sure you know I exist, let alone that you care. As we read this section, God isn't mentioned at all, is he? He doesn't come on the scene until verse 20. And yet to say that God is absent could not be further from the truth. Because verse 12 is like a ray of sunshine amidst a dark situation. Verse 12, but the more they were oppressed, the more they multiplied and spread. So the Egyptians came to dread the Israelites. We're meant to see here that even when God seems absent, when it seems like he has forgotten, don't believe it. Here we see he is at work even in the darkest situations, keeping his people, keeping his promises. Humanly speaking, Pharaoh's plans seem like they would work. And yet he hasn't counted on the fact that he is fighting against God's promises and his plan for his people. God is still bringing about his plan. That doesn't mean that the pain and suffering isn't real. It doesn't reduce the anguish of God's people at the hands of evil men. but it does mean that God is with them through it all, working out his plan, keeping his people, we'll see in a bit, holding back wicked plots and the attempts of men to snuff out his people. And this, I think, is where we need a big picture of what God is like. This is why we need the Exodus story. See, God's people here weren't given an explanation of what God was doing. They didn't know how he was working out his plan. And that's almost always the case for us too, isn't it? And yet, as we look at this part of the Bible now, we can see that God was being faithful and he was with them, keeping them. He did remain faithful to his word, even when they couldn't have possibly known that to be the case. Here we see that God is much bigger than our circumstances, that he can even use the evil deeds of wicked men to bring about his purposes. Here we see that even when we can't see how God might be at work keeping his people, we can trust that he is. As we go through Exodus, we're going to see time and time again that God is incredibly faithful, even when his people are being wildly unfaithful. He can still be trusted, and he still keeps his promises. And that is because, thirdly, he is the king. God is faithful to his promises, even in the face of human opposition, because God is king. In verse 15, we see that Pharaoh's atrocities against God's people have only just begun. Because next he tells the midwives, Shiphrah and Puah, women whose job was to bring new life into the world, that now they were to bring death instead. Verse 16, when you are helping the Hebrew women during childbirth on the delivery stool, if you see that the baby is a boy, kill him. But if it is a girl, let her live. What Pharaoh asks here is abhorrent, the killing of children, to destroy the people of Israel once and for all. No more men, no more babies, no more Israelites. Pharaoh, as king over the nation, thinks that he is in absolute power. He thinks he can do whatever he wants, that he can bring about the rise and fall of nations. But we see here that the midwives know the truth. Verse 17, the midwives, however, feared God and did not do what the king of Egypt had told them to do. They let the boys live. See, ultimately here, Pharaoh is not standing against God's people. He is setting himself up against God. And we'll see this pattern carry on again and again through the next few chapters. Who is the rightful king? Well, Shiphrah and Puah, they knew who the rightful king was. They feared God more than Pharaoh, and so they disobeyed Pharaoh. Now, whether they lied or not is not really important. What is highlighted here is that they feared God. That's what's key. They trusted God's promises. And they are held out to us as an example of what trusting in God's promises looks like in the face of opposition. Knowing that the Lord is king and knowing that he is faithful. And through the faithfulness of individuals in the face of opposition and threat, through ordinary people who trust God's promises and fear him above what the world threatens, as is so often the case, God brings about his plans and purposes. We see here that God cares about individuals. While Pharaoh remains completely unnamed, these two women are named personally. God notices the faithfulness of these individuals, who in the face of the world fear him above all else and seek to do what is pleasing to him. And these two women are blessed because they know the blessing of being under God's good rule. And God shows kindness to them in giving them children. The irony is that actually Pharaoh's plan to wipe out the Israelites actually just leads to the birth of more Israelites. We're meant to see so clearly here that opposition to God and his purposes is so futile. Pharaoh thought that he was the king, and yet he was no match for the king. Nothing will stop God keeping his promises. Nothing will stop him being faithful to his people. God's promise to Abraham will not be thwarted. God is committed to seeing what was lost at the fall being restored, such that once more there will be God's people in God's place, enjoying the blessing of knowing God and enjoying his good rule. And if we need any more convincing of that fact, well, as we look at Exodus 1, our eyes should be brought forward to another king, Herod this time, with another baby killing plot, another attempt to stop God's promise to Abraham being fulfilled, of blessing coming to the whole world through his offspring. And yet through the faithfulness of individuals, once again, opposition to God's plan failed. Herod thought he was king, but he was shown to be powerless to stop the coming of the king, the Lord Jesus, the serpent crusher, coming to rescue God's people from slavery, not in Egypt, but slavery to sin. To deal with the big problem that has plagued humanity since the fall, that we might be God's people, his forgiven, rescued, redeemed people, under Jesus' kingly rule, who come to Jesus now, the place where we meet God, and who one day will enter his presence in that new creation, never to leave. A God of broken promises? Not a chance. God is a God who is faithful. He is a God who keeps his promises, whose plans will not be thwarted, who is king. A God that we can trust. One whose promises are all yes in Jesus. Who has shown himself again and again to be faithful. Even when we don't know what he's doing, even when he seems distant, he isn't. He is at work and he can be trusted because God is faithful to his promises, even in the face of human opposition, because God is king. Amen.